Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, November 5th, and a lot of news to get to this morning, including Democrats waking up very happy this morning, or should we say the communist socialist wing of the Democrats waking up very happy this morning with all of the wide sweep of some very prominent elections that we will get to later on in the program. But meanwhile, first, we want to cover the chaos in the government shutdown, along with a couple of really concerning airline issues. There was a UPS cargo plane crash that created a massive fireball at Louisville Airport yesterday. That was a catastrophic UPS plane disaster that the Fox News headline said left at least 7 dead, 11 injured. And also yesterday, a bomb threat prompted a United Airlines plane evacuation and a ground stop at at Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. And meanwhile, amid the government shutdown, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy warned of air travel mass chaos by next week. This is coming from Politico. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy on Tuesday said the government shutdown has injected more risk into air travel and warned of widespread flight cancellations and potentially closed airspace if air traffic controllers miss their second full paycheck next week. Duffy told reporters at a press conference that controllers he has spoken with told him that some could manage missing one paycheck, but none could miss two, which would happen early next week if Congress does not break the stalemate by then. Duffy predicted such a pressure point would inject chaos into the air system. While Duffy maintained that the air travel system is safe and said that his agency would slow traffic down in case of significant air traffic controller staffing shortages, he did say the shutdown, which hit the 35-day mark yesterday, is introducing more risk. So to talk about all of this, let's welcome in Scott Uhlinger, who is a former CIA officer and one of our best guests on a lot of these issues. So, Scott, let's turn first to this injection of risk as the transportation secretary warns. I think this is really hitting home to a lot of people, especially with holiday travel coming up.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is, Jenna. What the secretary is saying is absolutely true. You know, whether we like it or not, I was a government worker for my career, but the way the average government worker lives, like I said, one paycheck they can get through, but maybe two they can't. So that's going to affect the thousands of federally employed air traffic controllers to the country. It would be interesting if there was a way that Trump could imaginatively fund this. We had, you know, a billionaire basically funded the U.S. military paychecks. The money that would be required to fund air traffic controllers would be a much less sum. However, I'm not sure what he's working on. And so it'll be interesting to see how this affects the discussions about the government shutdown, because what people are saying is that now that the elections are over, the Democrats are going to be looking at basically the Democrats now want to solve the budget problem. But what does that mean? Does that mean that they're going to continue to ask for the United States taxpayer to fund illegals or not? And these incidents put more pressure on Trump and the Republicans to agree to something. So hopefully Trump will stay strong, maybe look for some kind of imaginative funding for these folks, and we can continue with the shutdown, only because I don't want to see the Republicans give in to the Democrats and fund illegal immigrant subsidies to the tune of $1 trillion.
Yeah, absolutely not, especially after the Democrats are claiming a victory today post the election yesterday. That would just be a really bad move on Republicans' part. So they need to stand strong. But this is a very difficult mess here. And so what about the policy perspective? I mean, when, you know, Democrats are complaining that the SNAP benefits, a lot of which goes to illegals or non-U.S. born residents, and Trump is now claiming that it's his honor to then, you know, use some of those contingency funds to help people, you know, go in and get food that they simply don't want to pay for and they don't want to get a job. I mean, yes, some people are on SNAP benefits that legitimately, but a lot of people aren't. And why not use that contingency fund for things that are actually necessary, like air traffic control?
Right. So that's what I think and what I hope is going to happen. I think Trump was that was a political play when Trump was tweeting about that kind of thing. He understands, I think, that with the government shutdown, it generally is not a good look for the Democrats, and he continues to try to paint them in a corner by and then saying, okay, well, you know, we're going to look at funding you all. He understands, whether he says that or not, he understands that, like I said, you know, less than 30% of the people collecting SNAP benefits are, like, you know, native-born Americans, and it's a huge problem. So hopefully he's going to stay strong on that. But in the meantime, like I said, with Thanksgiving and stuff coming up, it's unfortunate. But I do want to point out with the UPS crash, that does not seem to have, basically, it does not involve air traffic control or anything like that. It has to do with maintenance. Now, they reported an engine fire almost on takeoff, and the explosion was huge because the airplane was fully fueled up for a flight to Honolulu. So this is a company maintenance issue because their engine was not properly maintained and they had a flame out. So that is not related to the air traffic control situation. However, of course, politically, the Democrats will cast it as being directly related to the air traffic control situation.
Well, good to know that, and hopefully there can be some messaging around that that dispels that myth. And so I think bottom line for the air traffic control situation is that people want to know, and I mean, I trust Secretary Duffy a lot more than Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who himself wasn't even on the job, probably less than the people who were furloughed.
Right, absolutely. But
I trust Duffy, but should people at this point be concerned about the safety of air travel?
I don't think I'd be concerned about the safety as much as basically I would maybe look at alternate plans for Thanksgiving in terms of driving or maybe even rail, because although actually rail would be a problem too because of Amtrak, because basically they will reduce the amount of if there is a problem, the air traffic activity will be reduced in relation to the shortage of personnel. So what people would be looking at is substantial delays. And that's the real problem, is the substantial delays. I don't think the safety factor is as prevalent, but you know, people are used to holiday delays. Well, I think this time it's going to be in spades.
And that will just create mass chaos. And hopefully the Republicans can continue to message this correctly as a Democrat shutdown, because if the Democrats would simply agree to that clean continuing resolution and fund the government, but then continue the negotiations, then you know, we could get all of this funded. But we're going to talk to about that more next segment. And so I want to also get your thoughts, Scott Uhlinger, on what happened at DCA yesterday and the bomb threat, because this, you know, this seemed to be, it was on Election Day, you know, which of course isn't national, but it was still, there was still attention, you know, given to that. And of course, as people are having these rising concerns about, you know, a lot of Muslim infiltration in the United States, you know, a lot of these things seemingly are at least converging in terms of the media narrative.
Right, that's true. Although I don't know much about the details of the threat, it does seem like perhaps the timing of this is very interesting. Was it done to provoke, to basically embarrass the Republicans? In other words, some kind of Democratic operative or people sympathetic to the Democratic Party called this in, knowing that it would draw attention to air traffic and then basically form something on which the Democrats could put Republican blame. Okay, see, we're having more bomb threats now because the Republicans aren't funding the government. I think something like that is not really a stretch of the imagination. I think that we may find that that is likely what happened, something like what I just described.
Yeah, and according to the USA Today article that I read, it said a bomb threat against a United Airlines flight prompted a brief closure at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport and forced passengers on the plane to evacuate under the tarmac. The FBI investigated the incident and said that no credible threat existed. So the United Airlines acknowledged the incident, and obviously on the ground they had to take that very seriously, but it does seem like that was perhaps more for political purposes than thankfully an actual incident. But this raises the question overall of political violence, because, you know, as the United States Senate had a hearing a couple of weeks ago on this very issue, we've seen this in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination and all of the attention more to the rise of leftist extremism. And now that they are basically the party of socialist communists, I think that that is a real concern for Americans.
It is. It is a big problem. You know, I live in Pennsylvania, and there were a couple of bomb threats in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania on polling stations to very transparently affect turnout. And so this is a real problem. And I want to point out another problem that's very irritating is that it's the Republican Congress, because President Trump understands that these people are at war with us. It doesn't mean he likes it or he doesn't like it, but it is a fact. And I think your listeners understand that these people are at war with us. We can ignore it, but we can't ignore the consequences of that. And there are too many Republican politicians who basically are afraid of riling the hornet's nest. And so they don't want to support Trump on things like on different things like redistricting or various other things that he's trying to do, because Trump understands that we're at war. It's like these Republicans who are spineless are afraid of aggravating the Democrats, and they don't understand at this point we're past that. It doesn't matter whether you cooperate with Trump or not. They're going to come after you if they are elected again. And so you may as well accept that and cross the Rubicon and join Trump in trying to destroy this stuff in the bud, because they will come after you. They're not going to remember that, you were the guy who was soft, who didn't really support Trump. You know, we're not going to send you to a camp. It doesn't work that way. And there's too many Republicans who are either dishonest, stupid, or living in some kind of fantasy land that they don't understand that this is political war, like almost on a civil war level, that we have to take action to prevent these monsters from taking over again.
Yeah,
and they
absolutely
need to get with the program.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no, you know, coexist in the cutesy little bumper sticker with communists that have a totally different view of government and an attorney general that was just elected in Virginia last night that literally wanted to see the death of the children of his political opponent. I mean, these are not people that should be in elected office, and yet we're seeing that rise. And real quickly, what does it say to you when so many of the people that voted for Mamdani in New York City were not native-born Americans?
Right. Well, basically, right. So that hopefully this is going to put to rest. You know, I taught university at two places in New York City. I'm from Long Island, 50 miles away from New York City. So New York City has been a part of my life for almost my entire life. I will never set foot in that city again, nor have I in the past 5 or 6 years. But the bottom line is, you know, oh, people talk about 9/11 and stuff. Okay, the New York City of 9/11 no longer exists. It's like talking about New York in the 1880s. Those people are dead or gone or have been replaced. Replaced in the great replacement by new immigrants. Okay, so basically, right, foreign-born and illegals basically elected this man. Okay, New York City is not an American city anymore. It is a globalist type of city. And so those types of people elected this guy, and that's just a fact. And so President Trump is going to have to deal with that. But unfortunately, like, I don't think there's any going back for New York City.
Well, that's going to be very scary. But Scott Uhlinger, thanks so much. We're already out of time. We'll be right back with more.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, in the midst of the government shutdown, President Trump posted this on his Truth Social yesterday, which Vice President Vance then reposted on X. Trump said the Democrats are far more likely to win the midterms and the next presidential election if we don't do the termination of the filibuster, the nuclear option, because it will be impossible for Republicans to get common sense policies done with these crazed Democrat lunatics being able to block everything by withholding their votes. For 3 years, nothing will be passed and Republicans will be blamed. Elections, including the midterms, will be rightfully brutal. If we do terminate the filibuster, we will get everything approved like no Congress in history. We will have fair, free, and safe elections, no men in women's sports or transgender. For everybody, strong borders, major tax and energy cuts, and we will secure our Second Amendment, which the Democrats will also terminate immediately. If we don't do it, they are far more likely to do well in the upcoming elections, which would mean a packed Supreme Court, 2 more states, and 4 more Democrat senators, D.C. and Puerto Rico, and 8 more electoral votes. Remember, Republicans, they are going to end the filibuster as soon as they get the chance. We know this because they have already tried. And the only 2 people who didn't go along are now out of office. But they have a much less chance of winning if we have great policy wins after wins after wins. In fact, they will lose big and for a very long time. Terminate the filibuster now. He's now speaking in capital letters. Terminate the filibuster now. End the ridiculous shutdown immediately. And then, most importantly, pass every wonderful Republican policy that we have dreamt of for years but never gotten. We will be the party that cannot be beaten. The smart party, with 3 exclamation points. So a lot that he was ranting about there, but I couldn't agree more. So let's welcome in Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And we talked about this previously, even before President Trump came out saying that the filibuster needed to be terminated. And so how likely do you think that it is that Senate Republicans see this as simply a procedural obstacle that the Democrats are taking advantage of?
Well, good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you. I mean, I love President Trump's post, and he's right. And, you know, this is something that I have debated, you know, with others, and I know you have as well. And I, you know, we always hear the arguments like, oh, we have to have the filibuster rule or the cloture vote rule in place, because if they get in charge, they're going to do this. Well, let's flip that and say, well, guess what? We're in charge, so let's do this. And there's not a state Senate. I mean, if we want to compare the U.S. Senate to our state legislatures, most state legislatures that I know of in the state Senate don't have that rule either. And it goes back to letting the majority govern. And if the people don't like what the majority does, they're going to flip back to the other party. And so I think that President Trump is so right. If we pass the policies that we know that are good, that we will be rewarded by the American people. We saw that here in Indiana. Back in 2004, Governor Mitch Daniels was elected. We had a small majority in the House of Representatives. We had a good majority in the Senate. And we passed all these great conservative policies, education reform, energy reform, transportation and infrastructure. And we now have supermajorities in Indiana in the legislature because it's a great place to live and work. The cost of living is low. Taxes are low. You know, people from Chicago are fleeing to Indiana because they're tired of the high taxes in Chicago. So I think Trump is right on this, that you know, and I get the history with the filibuster rule and the cloture vote, but we've got to realize, what has that gotten us so far? Well, it's gotten us $37 trillion of debt and a government that is bloated beyond what we even recognize. So something should change, and I think that's one of those pieces that needs to change.
Yeah, and I love how you put that Republicans shouldn't just always play defense and say, well, you know, whatever we do now, we want to prevent the Democrats, if they get in power again, from taking advantage of whatever we do in this moment, rather than taking the moment to actually advance conservative America First policy. And wanting a procedural rule set that can actually benefit Republicans, because we know that Democrats will always take advantage of the rules. They never play fair. Right. I always say, if the Democrats didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. And so why are we caring that if they are upset that we want a procedural change, that they're just going to change anyway?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, if they get the majority, they could do it as well. And, you know, we've already done it on the judges. And, you know, the original cloture vote was actually 75 senators had to vote to shut down debate. And the only reason they had it, or the reason they had it, was because if you wanted to give every senator the opportunity to speak on an issue rather than just shutting them down and saying, hey, you guys don't get to say anything because we've got a majority of senators saying that we're done with debate. So it's just simply a vote saying we're either done with debate or we're not. And so they were having a hard time. They were starting to abuse the rule and say, guess what? We're not done speaking. And, you know, they were just trying to drag things out to make it difficult for the majority party to pass their legislation. Well, again, I mean, if you want to filibuster, go to the floor like Mr. Smith did when he went to Washington, and you stand on the floor and you filibuster and you sway the voters, you sway the argument in the Senate to a different direction if you think you can. But if the majority party it has won the election and they're representing the majority of Americans in the Senate, then they should be able to govern. And I think that's why, you know, congratulations to the Democrats. You know, they won all the elections yesterday. And I think it's because they did shut the government down. They got the people in Northern Virginia, all the federal government employees, you know, all up in arms over what President Trump is doing. They had their full attention because government was shut down. They weren't going to work, and they won the elections. And so, and the American people are blaming Republicans for the shutdown. It was the Democrats because they didn't give enough votes on the cloture vote. So how many people are going to understand that? I mean, it's a complicated process, but when they elect a majority to govern in Washington, they expect them to do something. But when a small group of senators can shut it all down, then we get blamed for that. And I think that's why the rules should be changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. You can follow him on social media across all platforms. I encourage you to do that at Rep. Stutzman. And I think that the rules and the procedure and the process have presumed good faith debate, and that people were actually coming wanting to challenge each other. They could be convinced if a good argument was there. We don't see that in politics anymore. I mean, all that the Democrats are doing really with the rules is figuring out how they can be an obstacle when they're the minority party, or how they can ram their agenda through when they're the majority. And Republicans actually need to take a lesson from that playbook and say, okay, maybe we need to actually figure out how to govern when we're in the majority. Because the problem that I have with a lot of Republicans is that they're refusing to take advantage of the rules that are in place. And so I want to ask you about this other headline that came out yesterday, which I thought was fantastic, from Congressman Brandon Gill from Texas, is that he actually filed articles of impeachment against Judge Boasberg, U.S. district judge, for his role in the Arctic Frost probe. And even if this never got to the two-thirds threshold in the Senate on trial to actually remove him from office, this is the kind of stuff that needs to continue happening in Congress. How do you view that impeachment?
Yeah, no, I support it. In fact, I signed on to Congressman Gill's bill to impeach the judge, because, again, this is where the Democrats are so much better. They love to work in the dark of night, you know, when people aren't watching, and they're moving. I mean, we saw this with redistricting after 2020. We saw this with all of the judge appointments. You know, now, instead of impeachment, because they don't have control of the House as of now with President Trump, and that's why we need to win the 2026 midterm elections, is, they're now using the courts, and they've got their activist judges on courts across the country that they know they can go to, that they're going to get the headline. They're going to get the decision that gives them the headline that they want. And of course, the mainstream media is going to run with it. You know, there's a political term that is used, and it's called a wrap-up smear. And it's using the media, the political process, and, you know, the law to basically smear somebody, and they wrap that all together. The media is complicit with it. The politicians are complicit with it. And then they use the law against a particular person, which they did against President Trump. I was a victim of that back in 2016 in a campaign. And it just comes at you, and it's tough for most people to beat. But, this judge is part of that whole process, and that's what we're seeing, you know, in the swamp, is people are complicit with taking, you know, people out. And again, that's why they hate Trump so much, is because they tried every which way to remove him from power, and he won. And I think that's what, you know, we do, like you said, you know, we need to learn from them how they play. And that's why this redistricting effort is so important, because look what the voters of California just gave the California legislature, the ability to redistrict in California, and they're going to pick up 5 seats, most likely, out of 52 congressional districts in California. I believe that's the right number. Republicans will likely have 4 seats out of 52. That's how gerrymandered California will be. That Republicans will have so little voice from California. And that's why I think it's important we fight back in Indiana and do the same thing in states like Missouri and Ohio and other states to offset that, because those are the games. They're not breaking the rules necessarily, but they are definitely bending them to their benefit. And that's why we have to fight back the same way.
Well, they're changing the rules, of course, for their preferred outcome. Yeah. And then they know that the judges like Boasberg and others, and they forum select, will then go along with the Democrats and say, well, you know, hey, the voters wanted California Prop 50. So, that's OK. We have to yield to the will of democracy. And then whenever it's Republicans that are actually trying to be fair about it and not actually and actually eliminate a lot of these ridiculous district lines that were just drawn, like, for example, on the basis of race that the Supreme Court just heard, then suddenly it becomes, well, Republicans are racist and all of this nonsense, that then judges grab a hold of that instead of recognizing the overall principle of fundamental fairness. And so from just a broad perspective, when you look at the state of of governing in the United States from, you know, California to now electing the communist in New York and the problem with the judiciary and all of this, we have a legitimate problem of governance. And there needs to be something that is done in terms of recognizing the actual constitutional structure. And I think rolling back some of these actually bad amendments, like if we didn't have the 17th Amendment, we wouldn't have a current government shutdown, because the majority of red legislatures would be sending U.S. senators instead of having them popularly elected. I mean, we've gotten into this mess largely because we have allowed the rules to be changed so much.
Yeah. Yes. No, you're exactly right. And it's all done under the guise of, you know, of democracy, which I understand, you know, we're a democratic process, but we're a constitutional republic. And, you know, Thomas Jefferson's greatest fear was, you know, if the citizenry were able to vote themselves into the treasury, that's what was going to cause us to go bankrupt. I mean, you know, he was fighting for a balanced budget amendment in the Constitution, and it didn't happen. And just think that if we would have a constitutional amendment on a balanced budget, we wouldn't have $37 trillion of debt today. But you see the outcry, you know, that because of the shutdown, you know, all of a sudden food stamps are not being sent out. How there's all of a sudden this outrage, and it's like, well, you shut the government down. I mean, what else did you expect? And so it's like they want it both ways, and it's just, we have to stand firm. We cannot allow for, you know, the socialist agenda that is now front and center in New York City. I mean, I was watching Mondami's speech last night, and I mean, it is just blatant, you know, socialism. And I hope the American people wake up this morning and realize that, you know, if we allow New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles, those three cities, to direct national policy, we're in big trouble in this country. And that's why, you know, President Trump gets it. President Trump sees it, and Republicans are standing with him in the House. And now, you know, if we want to get anywhere in the Senate, that cloture vote is going to have to be addressed for us to actually govern, which, you know, the slim majority of Americans expect us to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that Congressman Stutzman, I hope that Senator Thune, you know, the leader in the Senate, and also Speaker Johnson will come out very publicly in favor of removing the filibuster and not allowing the Democrats to just take advantage of a process that, you know, really is just up to internally to the Senate, and to not allow them to get away with that. You know, Speaker Johnson is very much a rules follower. He's very much kind of, you know, that team player type of mentality. Where do you see him and Leader Thune on this, and if they can get enough Republicans at this point to just say, okay, enough is enough?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I admire Speaker Johnson tremendously. He has been a huge difference maker in the House of Representatives and in the whole institution. And I think that, you know, there is a plenty of reasons, you know, to always protect the institution, but at the same time, we need to understand that people will use the rules against you, and that's what's happening right here. And I know that, you know, Speaker Johnson and President Trump are very close. You know, they're constantly communicating along, you know, with Senator Thune. And I think it's some of the, you know, the old guard in the Senate, you know, still wants to protect that cloture vote in the institution. But, you know, one thing is, you know, and I've always believed this, is that politics always supersedes policy, but good policy will always supersede politics. That's why we need good policy to pass so we win in the political arena.
Well said, and absolutely. Well, I hope that message gets carried to the Senate and we see some movement on this. But Congressman Stutzman, thanks so much for your perspective, for your work on Capitol Hill. The American Family Radio family is always praying for you and everyone in Washington. Again, follow Representative Stutzman on X and social media. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as we have been discussing, the Democrats won largely yesterday, unfortunately, even though this was predicted. And if Republicans would have won any of these races, then it would have been really from coming from behind. But what does especially Mamdani's win say about the future of the Democrat Party and especially the younger generation? Because an exit poll type report showed in one preview citing 60% of 18 to 34 year olds ranked Mamdani first compared to just 10% for Cuomo, who of course previously was a Democrat. If you heard, and I would encourage you to go and listen to Mamdani's full victory speech, because it mimics actually, at least in my opinion, Obama from years ago, just saying how much the American people and the voters in New York City are ready for change. And he kept using that term change that did echo Obama in 2008. And in 2008, that was when you saw really a rise of the trans movement, a lot of the rise of the post-truth society, a rise of a lot of the anger and the clash that really has been the identity of the Democrat Party for the last, 20 years. And so this is really a hard, hard turn left for the Democrat Party. And Mamdani wasn't disavowed by mainstream Democrats. They were either silent or actually endorsed him. So let's welcome in Mark Mitchell, who is the CEO of Rasmussen Reports. And Mark, what do you think that this win in New York City for Democrats says overall about their trajectory and this hard turn left?
Well, let's also acknowledge people have been calling me a black pillar for a long time, and it's not just the Democrats won. I mean, these were blue states, but the Republicans absolutely got annihilated because the big tent coalition that Trump was able to use to outperform in these states just a year ago didn't really turn out in the same amount. I mean, Jack Cittarelli increased his vote totals, but not enough because the Democrats were coming out no matter what because they want to resist Trump. And the Mamdani thing specifically, I mean, we talked about the fourth turning on your show. This is a very real phenomenon, I think, and we're seeing it. And on the left, they had this sort of like centrist pragmatism kind of Democratic Party with Bill Clinton. And they, long time ago, cast aside the sort of like boomer values of the Democrat Party to embrace the activist, progressive youth movement, which is moving farther and farther to the left. But this is what New York City wants. This is what the Democrat Party wants. It's what their young voters want. And you're going to see more economic populism. Unfortunately, these people also poll very high on questions about political violence. So that's not good. And they're embracing with open arms, the Palestinians. So this is the direction the country's headed on the left. The problem on the right, though, is what you're seeing play out just in the last week or two is that the younger people on the right do not share the same values as the people in the Republican Party at large. And so you're seeing this kind of like BoomerCon freak out over not being able to maintain control of a set of values that haven't worked for America. It just hasn't. And I think, part of this is maybe like people don't like the idea that J.D. Vance is the sort of MAGA heir apparent right now, and that he came out with a very, very, in my opinion, well thought through delivery of what the future of America First could look like, what that platform looks like. And it's things that I think people in the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. are probably freaking out about, like the idea that, we can shut down legal immigration for a while. Maybe we do need to get our house in order. And so there's this like younger pragmatism that's not ideological or values driven. And I think that the Republicans aren't going to be able to convert those people. I think they wanted the Trump Republican Party, and the Republican Party hasn't given them that. And let's also acknowledge that, Donald Trump was given a very strong mandate for a domestic policy agenda. He's done some of it, but you got to admit the delivery's been all over the map. And where are we at now? Well, the longest shutdown in history with no apparent plan forward at all. Republican Congress that's done next to nothing. And Trump's railing at them to do the nuclear option, which I've been calling for since like the beginning of the year. And they can't even do it because they don't have the votes because they don't whip votes like Democrats. So that's where we're at. I mean, it's a complete and utter failure of the Republican Party, and we all know it. And you can look it around on the accounts on Twitter today. of the Republican Party. And what I certainly don't see is clear-eyed introspection. And one of the things I see a lot of is them just sort of like yelling at the clouds about Nick Fuentes, not even understanding that he represents a movement that he didn't build. This is like growing on the right. It's frustration. And they have no idea. And it's because they still want to maintain control of the set of values that's worked for them, but not for the American people.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Mark Mitchell, because you're absolutely right that there isn't really a lot of the clear-eyed introspection going on, at least to the extent of the Democrats winning so large. And a lot of Republicans are simply saying, well, you know, that's typical for when the party in control, you know, loses the next election. And, you know, these were blue states and, you know, oh, well, instead of actually looking at the Republican Party and the contrast and the divergence among the younger voters and the old guard, and asking ourselves the very difficult question of whether the principles of conservatism are actually being passed on to the next generation meaningfully, that they understand that this big tent coalition really does have contours and boundaries, and we really understand what it means to stand up and say, I'm a Republican or I am a conservative. And as much as we can say that the left and the Democrat Party is having sort of an identity crisis between their old guard and their new, the Republican Party is as well.
Yeah, the problem is that I don't think the case has been appropriately made to the younger generation that these systems actually really work for them at all. You have to acknowledge that the people in power in the Republican Party, and again, I'm not an ageist. I'm talking about the force turning. The boomer generation had inherited a land of milk and honey. The silent generation bled in World War II and built an America that gave them the best of everything. They had an unbelievable period of peace and prosperity. You know, we had the nuclear weapon. We had a superpower status. Then we had, you know, all of this era of discovery in the 60s and 70s. They spent their lives in very individualistic and selfish pursuit as all these institutions crumbled around them. And then they handed the millennials and the Zoomers a society in complete and utter wreckage. They can't find marriageable women. They're surrounded by porn. They can't buy houses. Their jobs have been given to foreigners. Everything is arrayed against these people. The churches were destroyed all around them. These people aren't really Christian. Capitalism was sold down a river for like free market global, big business globalism and corporate welfare. Like, how much of the situation economically with these young people was brought about by the bipartisan resolution to the great financial crisis? I mean, they were literally dumped on, and now they're being yelled at because they don't have the same values. Well, these people, what they want is not traditional conservatism, and they certainly don't want these people moralizing to them about some kind of set of values that they haven't even seen working. Like, most of these people come from broken homes. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just not the same society. And you can yell at them all you want and say, well, you got to pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And they're just going to tune you out because they know you're wrong. Because they don't know how good the boomers had it. And the boomers have absolutely no idea how bad the Zoomers have it. And what are they going to do? They're going to glom on to some new value set. And I'm trying to figure out what that is. But what I can tell you is, they don't care about these old mores. Like, they don't want to hear about America the melting pot, because if we got rid of all 2.6 million temp workers, these people would have jobs. They would have high-paying engineering jobs. And we told them, like, hey, you're a coal miner, but you have to learn to code, and you can do it in 3 months. It's great. While we were giving away those jobs to Indian engineers, like, that's literally what happens, like, out of two sides of our mouth. And that was the Republican Party that enabled that. And even just months ago, was trying to backdoor amnesty behind closed doors in Capitol Hill. So this is really perverse. And I think the younger generation, like the millennials or the hero generation, according to the fourth turning, they're the ones that are going to say, okay, guys, that was nice. You had your chance, but we're taking over and we're building something new. I think J.D. Vance kind of represents us seeing the beginning of that. And he came out with some really bold statements. Like, he even made probably one of the most profound statements about Christianity that I've heard in a long time, certainly not coming from pastors, but not shying away from the Great Commission. That's really bold. You know what I mean? Because, like, the church is completely bereft of, I think, major leaders. And that's why Charlie Kirk, everybody looked up to him so much. And that, okay, now he's gone. So who's out there making the case that these kids need to have traditional? Like, we ask the questions, and Gen Z doesn't really care very much about traditional Western values. They don't really care that much about marriage. Only 40% of them said that America would be better if we had more traditional marriages. What they do want right now, I can tell you, is economic populism. They think the housing crisis, the housing prices is at a crisis level, like 3 out of 4 of them. And they overwhelmingly say that America needs more economic populism. And, you know, what does that mean? That means this stuff has to be fixed. The jobs have to come back. The prices have to come down. And hopefully relieving these economic pressures will, you know, get us away from this sort of powder keg situation. But again, and I don't want to make it about Israel, but the point is that we're seeing, like, very aggressive behavior out of frustrated and angry people. And what are they doing? They're lashing out to get attention because all these concerns have been ignored by Republicans in power. They're not going to be able to make it go away. It's basically just going to be Streisand effect, and this stuff's going to grow and only make the Republicans look even more impotent. So again, I guess they're going to have this breakfast this morning, and Trump's going to yell at them. And they're going to probably say, oh, it's hard, politics is tough, there's all these rules. But people voted for massive change, and the Republican Party objectively has not given it to them and doesn't even have a plan how. I mean, the candidates that they ran this time around weren't really representative of this new right wave of economic populism and pragmatic solutions. You know what I mean? They're being yelled at and being called racist. And that it's identitarian politics. Well, that's fine. Then we're just going to have Mamdani. That's it. That's going to be the new president, because the right has no answer to this guy. They're not organizing. They're not focused. They have no message. They have no plan. The only thing they're desperately trying to conserve, it's not conservatism. They're just desperately trying to conserve the status quo as everything comes crashing down around them. And I know that sounds really histrionic, but I think we can all agree the window's closing here, and they have no idea. And they don't come to me for polling, so I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and, you know, the common thread, I think, that I see among the Zoomers and the Gen Z is that they just want to win. They want to be part of something that actually makes a difference. They are tired of the people behind the lecterns just pontificating, or, you know, as you mentioned, the White House breakfast with the GOP senators is going on right now. And under pomp and circumstance, Trump is yelling at them, and then the GOP senators will go back and probably do nothing. And everybody's been calling for removal of the filibuster to just get something done and actually win. And that was the big promise of the whole MAGA movement, was you will be so tired of winning. And that's what the young people gravitated to, because they've seen, and I think, unfortunately, they compare an ideal of conservatism and these principles to simply being on the defensive and basically the principled loserdom, or this kind of weak morality effect. And so that's why they're gravitating toward policies and or maybe even just getting out of politics altogether and saying, all we want to do is feel like we can succeed. And no one on the right is actually giving them a plan, a strategy, or actual wins to do that. I mean, Trump here and there, yes. But I mean, even look at the all of the immigration problems and some of these things. I mean, the mass deportations that were promised, you know, all of this winning that was promised, that now we have the trifecta, and the government's been shut down for 36 days and they can't even remove a simple rule. I mean, that doesn't scream winning to me.
I'll go one further, because this is not going to be won by Republicans until they understand internet culture. Because that's the world these people grew up in. I'm literally a Xennial. I'm on the dividing line between Gen X and millennials. And I saw the world before the internet, and I lived in the internet. And I understand this. And no Republicans understand it at all. Like, they brought the CEO of Reddit to Congress and didn't even make him break a sweat. And I think J.D. Vance gets it. No other Republican does. And this isn't new stuff. This is going back to 2015. The core of Trump's initial win was angry young men on the internet. And these people have two words. One of them is based. And what does based means? It means, well, you authentically stood up for something you believe. And then the other one is cucked. What is cucked? Well, it's short for cuckolded, right? And it means that you basically folded like a, you know, wet paper bag. You didn't stand up for your beliefs. You look like ridiculous. You're inauthentic. And again, I'm not bringing this back to Israel. It's just the most recent example of this. And if you look at Tucker Carlson's interview with Ted Cruz, Tucker Carlson raked him over the coals on topics like AIPAC. And
we got to leave it here, Mark Mitchell, but I got to have you back on again to have a longer conversation on this because you are so right. And I'm so tired of Republicans saying, well, X isn't real life. You know, social media isn't real life. But that's where people are going to that public forum to express their concerns and their frustrations. And the Republican Party has got to do something, especially in the midst of this huge Democrat win. So we'll continue to talk about this. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.